Hello and welcome to episode 12 of the Universe Podcast. My name is Leo and I am not your host today.
My name is Ellie.
My name is Charlotte.
And we're going to be your host today.
And today Leo is going to answer some questions for a change.
And he's going to read his poem called Dances. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, why not?
Would you like to introduce yourself?
I've introduced myself only once before, so I guess I can. Everybody else has introduced themselves more often than I have.
Yeah, we should know more about our host, right?
Well, hello. My name is Leo, as you might know. You know my voice by now, I think. I'm, of course, also a member of Universe, and I study English and history at the University of Vienna, not in the BED, as to answer the questions that always spring up immediately when I say that. And, I write poetry, and I like thinking about and discussing other people's work, and I like reading other people's work. And I like podcasting, obviously.
Obviously.
Okay, so do you want to start with your reading today?
Sure.
Yeah?
Okay. Why not? So this is called Dances. I'm not quite sure about the title yet, but I couldn't think. It didn't have a title before I sent it off to my hosts today for them to prepare questions. So I thought I'd give it a title, and this was the first one that I could think of.
I think it's matchy.
It
works pretty well.
I was actually wondering about the title, because you usually number your
poetry. Yeah, mm-hmm. it does have a number. But I don't remember. I can look the number up later, but I don't think people will care. It's not really important at all. Yeah. Before we discuss it at length, I guess I should start reading.
Yeah.
I should maybe say before that it's based on a photograph by the German early 20th century photographer August Sander of three farmers walking to a dance in 1914. Dances. Three farmers on their way to a dance, 1914. Their heads and lives hanging in the air, caught in between. They're looking back over their shoulder, hesitating mid-stride, here on the way down the road they are walking. Their present, a long-awaited dance, their world still whole, their future, an unlit muddy path, a muddy hall off somewhere in France, a different dance. But not tonight. Tonight they'll spin around in circles, holding on tight to this blurry world, and they'll be drunk on hopes and dreams shortly before the entire world splits at the seams. And you, my friends, do you hesitate? Do you look back over your shoulder at what's behind? Will you come back from whatever dance you're headed to? I hope you will, with your head always in the air.
Wow, thank you.
Thank you very much. I was wondering, you said that this poem is based on a picture, like a photograph. I was wondering how or where did you encounter this photograph?
I saw it in a YouTube video.
Really? Okay.
I saw a YouTube video about the photograph by famous author John Green, people probably know him.
Yeah.
And that's where the observation comes from, that their heads are... So the horizon in the photograph cuts off is at the same height as their neck is. So it looks like their heads are hanging in the air in the picture.
I see. Okay, cool.
What's the historical background of this picture? Do you know what they were heading to, or what does it represent, really?
I think all we know is that they were heading to countryside dance in 1914. August Sander was this German photographer who just travelled around Germany mm-hmm. in the early 20th century and photographed ordinary people.
Mm-hmm. And why were you inspired by this picture particularly?
Mostly by what, I don't know, it seems kind of significant because it's a very impactful picture in a way because these men don't know what they're walking into right now, but they don't know what they're walking into really. It's 1914. They probably sense that the political, or that, you know, there was a storm brewing somewhere, but they wouldn't know that they would probably have to go to war because just a couple of months later.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know what happened to these men. And it's kind of the same, you know, you know where you're walking to right now, you know, you got your plans for the week, you might mm-hmm. have your plans for the rest of the semester, but you don't mm-hmm. really have the plan. You don't know what's going to happen during the rest of your life. Anything might happen. And yeah.
So maybe it's kind of like a symbol for life's unpredictability?
I guess, yeah. That and, I don't know, just...
I totally can see what you mean, why you're inspired by it. It's like thinking of it way back in the history and everything, like you're never sure what's going to happen. And
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And also with your friends, I think that's another thing that... These three men, you know, we don't know who they were, but I like to assume they are friends, and mm-hmm. we don't know if they were able to stick together through all of this.
True.
Kind of like cherish the moment.
Yeah.
In your life now.
Yeah, there probably is like a certain Carpe Diem aspect to it.
Yeah. Actually, one of my questions is about that. I was wondering. If you think that this Carpe Diem element is a part of, is that kind of what your poem is about? Do you sometimes wish you could escape from your routine and everyday life and just enjoy yourself?
I don't know, I didn't really see it in so much of a daily Carpe Diem
mm-hmm.
thingy. A daily Carpe Diem notion, but much rather like, yeah, just enjoying your life in general.
Mm-hmm.
So, probably, yeah, I mean, I could always be more mindful of what I'm doing with my life,
mm-hmm.
surely, mm-hmm. yeah. And also, yeah, it's just, it kind of also speaks to certain directionlessness, I think. Because you don't really know where you're going. These men know where they're going, but they don't know where they're going.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it's more about, yeah, like celebrating life, even if there are so many risks and mm-hmm. so many things going on, and yeah, anything can happen, but you're not thinking about it right now. I mean, maybe back then it was more like physical. You could die in a war. I mean, you could still die, but war could... I mean, that all could still happen, but... maybe right now it's more about, again, like, ignoring your demons for a while and just, like, you know, dancing in circles.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Even if it's not perfect.
Yeah, exactly.
Certainly, I mean, their life probably wasn't too perfect. Mm, they yeah. probably had a really
well, it hard... Was perfect in hours, yeah.
for sure. Mm-hmm. So, growing up mustn't have been too nice back then.
Mm-hmm, exactly. I can relate with your interest in history because you're studying it, and yeah. then this poem is more like you can actually resonate with those people, kind of. That is really cool.
We also talked about unpredictability, and that reminded me of the rhyming scheme of your poem, which is kind of unpredictable too, I think, because it's not following a like standard...
Mm-hmm.
rhyming scheme. I noticed that lines 2 and 4 rhyme, then there's a rhyme in line 13, and then there's another one because lines 18 and 20 also rhyme again.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like that there are some rhymes in there. Yeah, but it's very unpredictable, I think. which I really like. Was it deliberate, like a deliberate choice to have to deconstruct it this way?
I don't think so. I think it's been so long that I wrote this poem. Mm-hmm. I wrote this in... Well, I began writing it... I don't know when exactly I began writing it, but I finished it in early February of 2017.
Mm-hmm.
So the rhymes definitely weren't deliberate. I think what was deliberate, there is a certain... I think there's a syllable structure to it.
Mm-hmm.
The syllables are fixed at the lines. As far as I remember, but not the rhymes. I think I stuck to the syllables and then just filled in what came to me.
Interesting that you mentioned that, because I felt like I read the poem first silently, and then I read it aloud to myself. And when I read that, and when you just read it, I had the feeling that this has a very interesting rhythm.
Okay.
And to me, it kind of represented music. And then I figured it's very fitting that the rhythm of your poem is kind of like music that people could dance to. So I was wondering if that was a thought you had, that you wanted it to resemble music.
No, I'm not trained, or I'm not very... My skill isn't very well honed as far as the formal aspects of poetry are concerned. I sometimes try to write formally strict poems, but I'm not very good at it. So I guess this was an accidental effect.
But it's so fascinating. You don't even intentionally do that, but people read so much into it and find stuff like that. Yeah. It's amazing, actually.
Mm.
I agree.
It would have to be a very slow dance, though, if you danced to this poem.
Yeah, yeah, but there are slow dances.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, it had to be would have had to be longer, you would have to repeat and repeat.
Yeah. Would have to be an epic poem.
Yeah.
Which I'm also rubbish at, because I can't write over several... I mean, this is of course the exception, because I wrote it on two different days, but I'm very bad at continuing projects that I started. I have loads of things in my archives. That's just the beginning of an epic poem, because I want to write poems like this, but I never come back to them.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes I go back to them a year later or something, just when I feel inspired by the same thing, but not the way that I was a year before. So I just cut it in half and then continue again. Another year, but then it turns out well. Some of them really turned out well, and I was surprised.
Oh, cool. So that's interesting. You
think about that.
Yeah, I mean, I've wanted to do that, yes, but I find if my former self is very strong or is very visible in those poems, I find that incredibly off-putting.
Moving to a little more general questions, I'm wondering, where your ideas usually come from? This time it was from a photograph, as we know, but yeah, what would you say?
All over the place, really. I mean, what I like to do is like to go for walks through the city, and then I have my phone with me, and I'll just sometimes lines would come into my head, lines like the first two or three lines, which are mostly a sentence or two, will come into my head. I'll write them down in my phone. And later at home, I'll extrapolate from the feeling that those lines give me, because I'd like to capture the feeling I have with a couple of lines. Apart from that, another thing I'd sometimes do is I just sit there in the evening and think about what I did that day. And sometimes that gives me an idea, but it doesn't really work that well.
That's very interesting. You look back at your day and you come up with poems
sometimes. Yeah, if I remember an interesting interaction I had that day.
Uh-huh.
Another thing is when I like the news are obviously a big inspiration.
Mm-hmm.
History also. Yeah, when you just hear about an interesting story on the internet or somebody's life story, something like that.
True.
It kind of comes to you from all over, and it I don't really know how to explain, but some things strike a note in you and others don't, mm-hmm. and you kind of have mm-hmm. to go with the flow.
True. Whatever evokes, like, the strongest emotion.
Yeah, that
comes out as poetry.
Yeah, that's where the poetry comes from, really, yeah, I think.
I think so.
Before, we mentioned that you usually number your poems, and now I'm interested in, and I would like to know why.
I started because I started to put them in one big work document to have an archive.
Ah.
I only had them, like, in my journal.
Mm-hmm.
And then later I transcribed them to my computer to be able to do editing more easily.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, then I also had the desire to know how many I'd already written. So I copied, like, my first journal's worth of poems into a Word document and then numbered them to see how many I'd already written.
So how many do you have?
The last one was 165.
Wow.
Since when have you written those? Like, I mean, last year or...?
I really only started writing in my first semester of uni. I'm really hard remembering when that was. This is my sixth semester of uni, so you can calculate that back from now. I won't do it. I won't embarrass myself on this podcast.
We're all in the same.
Yeah. Okay, let's all our good math whiz kids, what audience is? People.
Yeah.
I think calculate that.
This is themselves. The round of people who don't do math at all.
Correct.
Yeah. Very correct.
Yeah, and I was very prolific at the beginning. I started sometime in the first semester. I think I had an interest in poetry, but I never really wrote any. And I never really wrote any either. I just had this vague interest. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, I wasn't interested at all. Like, thinking back, before college, I wasn't even thinking about writing poems at all. Somehow, like, I liked reading them, some of them, but I always wrote stories, and then all of a sudden, I just started writing poems. Mm-hmm. I don't understand. Like,
the high culture of university, making an imprint on you, suddenly you write poetry.
I, like, improved so much and got so sophisticated. No, it was just my first semester or something, I don't even know.
Yeah.
Maybe stay up influenced me.
Maybe, yeah, because it's really like a tour, the poetry that you get, and I don't know if that was the first poem I wrote, but I think it was, well, the first series one. Professor Tettelman invited an American poet to the university, and the American poet, she gave like a small course, like one evening, mm-hmm. and I went there, and I've since forgotten the name of the poet, and it's a bit embarrassing, but yeah, there I wrote a poem as an exercise.
Ooh, nice.
The exercise was to write from the perspective of a kiss, which is a really nice exercise, I think.
Wow.
Yeah.
I agree.
Cool. When was this? In Steele?
Yeah.
Wow, where was I? We didn't have those.
Well, I started to study way before I stayed up, so
I never. Yeah. I think I started one semester before you.
Yeah, that might be. The thing was, I felt really out of place there because it was, I think, me and then the participants of the master's class that that. Over the course of which Professor Tettelman actually organized
mm-hmm.
this meeting with the poets, and she just mentioned it in her stay-up lectures that everybody can come if they want to.
Okay.
And I'm not sure anymore, but I might have been the only only freshman there.
That's nice. Yeah.
And a follow-up question: does the numbering of your poems motivate you to write?
Oh sure, yes. It's a bit silly, but I like looking back at how many I've already written.
Yeah.
And kind of also like it serves as an organizing tool, and also you just kind of for the number of numbers you went through over a certain time also can somehow say something about what you're going through in your life, if there's a lot to write about or not. Or if you're very inspired.
I can see why it might be motivating. You're like, I already have 160, what was it, one?
Four?
Five, I think.
My brain can't process numbers.
Yeah, but you know, it sounds more than it really is, because most of them are rubbish. Most of them aren't good. That's if every single one was good, I'd have a lot more things to bring to universe than I do.
No, I'm sure they're all fine, but we're always like so harsh on ourselves.
Sure.
Sometimes feel the same. I'm like, I gotta take this.
And sometimes I think it also changes, really. I find myself, especially, like, the most intense, and I think maybe you'll know this also, immediately after you write something, most of the time you don't think very highly of it, but if you come back, like, a couple of weeks later... If I come back a couple of weeks later, it's better than thought it was immediately after writing it. And sometimes, even if I don't like it then... If like a couple of months pass, then I'll like it.
Mm. Yeah, could also be the other way.
I can relate to that, because sometimes I forget about a story that I've written in the past, and then I coincidentally kind of find it again, and then I read it and I'm like, that's really good. Did I really write that?
And the annoying thing about that is you then forget how to do it, or you think you've forgotten how to do it, because you're like, I'd never be able to write this right now. I don't know how I wrote this. This is the problem. I don't know how I made this, but I must be able, because I continue to do it every now and then.
Exactly, yeah. I think it's just that we think too much about it. We're like, I have to do this, I want to do it, oh my god. No, it can't be bad, it can't be bad. It has to be good. So we kind of,
Exactly, and at the time you don't see that objectively, but after a while, once you forget it, it's like somebody else reading, like you're reading a story from somebody else, so you're more like objective to it. You don't have your own filters, sort of, your own self-criticism, so you can see it actually the way it is, so it's actually a good thing to like it later. But I guess like if you get into it again, you're going to start seeing it from your own perspective again. So it's not going to look as good, but maybe even if you continue, like, later on, you're still going to like it. It's still going to... It's still you. It's your own writing, so...
Yeah.
I think you'll never see it entirely objectively, though, since it's still your own writing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's still
agreed.
But, you know, what, especially concerning poetry, what is objectively, really...
yeah. But at least a little bit more apart or away from your subjectivity.
I think sometimes it can also improve the quality of a poem if you don't know what the author meant.
Yeah.
Because it opens more room for interpretation.
That's why I kind of like to be vague when I write it, so that people can get different ideas from their own perspective. I mean, this is not storytelling, so they could just get whatever they want. And then there are so many great results. I'm actually really surprised what they make out of it.
That's why I always had trouble writing poem analyses in school, because we were pushed to write, like, it had one interpretation and one only. And if we didn't find that, we were wrong.
Yeah.
And I really hated that, and I never... Whenever we usually had the choice between writing a poem interpretation and, I don't know, something else, kind of like a story. And I always took the story option, because I never wanted to interpret a poem in one way. And then I read online somewhere, in a poem, the poet says the curtains were red. What your English or German teacher makes you interpret is the stance for the poet's depression, because red is such a depressing color, and what the poem really meant, the curtains were red. So I really like that, because as you said, there's always more than one meaning in a poem.
Exactly.
And I really like that about poetry.
Yeah, that's why I don't like those like kind of literature classes in school, unless your teacher is super open-minded. because you don't really know what the author actually meant. And in university, that's like the biggest difference, because you just discuss it and you give your own opinion, mm-hmm. you give your own critical review, and nobody really questions that, mm-hmm. unless it's something like super famous and out there. I don't know, sometimes like Shakespeare stuff, mm-hmm. or so strictly interpreted, but mm-hmm. like others, I really like that about university.
I was always too scared to do the poem analysis in school, so I always did the discussion, mm-hmm. the topic discussion, mm-hmm. because I had opinions. My opinions were bad, but I had opinions.
That's what matters.
As long as you can argue, then
sure,
you're fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. So relating to that, did you have a particular kind of author of poetry that you like to read, or still do? I mean,
as hard as this is to admit, I don't own a single book of individual poetry.
That's totally fine.
Have you ever read one?
I have the Northern Anthology of English Poetry, which is like this thick tome, mm-hmm. of, mm-hmm. like chosen works of English poetry from like old English to up to the 1990s. Wow, I think that's really great, mm-hmm. but it's not very reader friendly because it's so big, and you know, it's just one poet after the other.
Mm-hmm. And also language wise,
you can choose. Of course, yeah, I can't reach the old English one, so, mm-hmm. but I could read Sylvia Plath and the more recent ones, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. I don't know why I picked Sylvia Plath there. She's just in the more recent ones. I don't have a couple of more individual ones that I like, but I'm very bad at remembering their names, of course. I don't have the one poet, mm-hmm. that I'm into.
Mm-hmm.
I think actually the poets whose work I enjoy the most frequently isn't actually, in the strict sense of the word, a poet, because he's a songwriter. It's John Darnielle from The Mountain Goats.
Okay.
Who was once by the New York Times listed, mm-hmm. I think it was one of the few non-rappers in the top 100 lyricists in music.
Wow, okay.
But that's a good way of seeing it, because I actually also have like songwriters that I like, whose work that I really love,
mm-hmm.
but I never considered them like poets.
Which they obviously are, because
that's,
I mean, like,
yeah, so interesting. My last, I think 2 semesters ago, which was my last semester, I actually had classes at the department. I wrote about Bob Dylan and him winning the Nobel Prize for Literature, and if song lyrics can be considered poetry or not. And that was really, really interesting.
So what's your verdict as the expert here?
My verdict is, it works both ways. My verdict is, originally poems were kind of sung to the music of a lyra.
Mm-hmm.
So originally they started out as songs, and then it developed in a different way, and they just were spoken and not sung anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you keep that in mind and take the poem, a really famous poem, and try to sing it, it usually works out really well.
Mm-hmm.
And vice versa, if you take a song and just read it, it also works, because it has strong and powerful words. I mean, not every song does, but the songs that do. So I think that is an indication that they are related and that they are twins, basically. So for me, they are kind of similar. I wouldn't say that they are necessarily exactly the same thing, because as we know, a lot of songs are not very poetic,
mm-hmm.
but I think they can be, and some of them really, yeah, really are.
Yeah, actually, now I think about it that way, it's true. There is this Irish singer called Dermot Kennedy, if you know him.
Mm-hmm.
He is so great with that. Like, you should check his, also our audience should check his songs and lyrics, mm-hmm. out. It's so, like, when he sings, it's also not like a typical song. I feel like he has a lot to say, but he does it in such a great way that it doesn't, like, it's not like, because in some songs, I feel like they're just shouting at you the lyrics. Like, mm-hmm. if the lyrics are have some kind of message, they're just, like, talking the lyrics, mm-hmm. kind of. But with him, it's like he manages to do it in such a way that it's just, like, really striking. And you get, like, it really resonates with the music, mm-hmm. and the words. And it's just so deep. It's so amazing. And you can make out so many meanings. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, actually, that is real poetry. That is what mm-hmm. it's about.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I like about John Darnielle as well. That's, he leaves so much room for interpretation. I find myself listening. So when I like music, what I do usually, so I listen to it over, at least listen to an album over and over and over until I can't hear it anymore. And John Darnielle, his music is the only music I can listen to over and over and over again. I still like it because every time I listen to a song, I might come to a different interpretation. I just like every single line of his. And then also when you look up what he meant, sometimes there is, you know, he says something about the song, mm-hmm. songs at concerts.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much depth and so much meaning. Like I did last semester, I had a class where we were asked to write an album review, and I wrote an album review of his latest album, Goths. So I went in for a week, mm-hmm. and looked up what he meant with the lyrics, and I literally got like an introduction into 1980s Southern California early goth and punk scene, which I would never have, like, I would never have heard of any of these bands, of any of these clubs, of any of the lifestyle. And also, you know, I would never have learned this much about drugs and taking drugs, like, driving away from the police while completely high on artificial drugs or something like that. Yeah,
it shows you a whole another world.
A whole another world that I would never have been able to mm. dive into.
Wow, maybe we should list those artists down.
Sure, I'll put them in the show notes. Yeah, out.
Good idea.
We'll do that.
I mean, Ellie and me know because we've heard some of your poetry, but maybe for our listeners it's also interesting to know, do your poems usually rhyme?
I don't know. What do you say? Do they? No, they don't.
You never consciously construct them, so maybe not always, but...
Sometimes I try to. I try sometimes to do it. It's easier, of course, to make them rhyme than it is to make them... like formally correct with like syllables and and meter and stuff like that, but yeah, it's the same as always with poetry. It kind of has to, sometimes it flows, sometimes mm-hmm. the rhymes just keep coming, and other times the words are fine and without rhymes as well.
Mm-hmm. So would you say you construct your poems then?
I mean, I'm sure there's a certain element of construction mm-hmm. to it, especially when you mull over the words in your head before you write them down, and you correct it later. So there's certainly construction to it, but it's not very strictly, not very highly constructed mm-hmm. most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Are there, like, going back to your poem, are there any more allegory that we don't see yet? Are there any more meaning behind it?
I mean, it's all quite literal, isn't it? No, not really. I mean, that's all pretty much out in the open.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay.
In this case, yeah. I mean, it's like, it's different when you write something about, like, personal, something really personal, then mm-hmm. you might be a bit more vague. And then also, of course, people might miss something that you as the author meant,
mm-hmm.
Which is, of course, also kind of the purpose. I don't know if it's the purpose, but yeah, it's a nice aspect of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I felt like it wasn't that literal just because we talked about how it's, like, representing the, like, how life is unpredictable mm-hmm. and all that, mm-hmm. and I was wondering if there's more to it maybe in that sense. But I guess not.
No, not okay. really, no.
Okay. Just making sure.
I have one very, I think, difficult question. I wouldn't know what to answer if
I'd be asked that question. Now I'm interested.
Exciting.
Can you say why you write poems?
Okay, yeah, that is a difficult question. So my first approach would be, if I write a poem,
mm-hmm.
a specific one, my first approach of answering the question is, that is, when I write poems, what do I achieve, want to achieve in the moment? And what I want to achieve in the moment, I suppose, is just getting the words out. Kind of mm-hmm. the words have a way of, when you have the first two or three lines that sound good, you kind of want to continue with that. The words want to be, the words want to be continued. I know, the words don't have their own will. It's all me doing this, but...
They do have their own will.
Yeah.
It feels like it. It, urge, right? It really feels like the words mm-hmm. have their own will. And I suppose, yeah, I mean, we've talked about this before on the podcast in a very early panel episode. Of course, that poetry is like a valve for you for expressions and mm-hmm. emotions and...
I think we talked about it in the pilot episode, the first one. Yeah, a way of dealing with emotions.
We kind of already touched on it. Would you say that there are certain themes or topics that you particularly like to address with your poetry?
Not consciously.
When you look back at your 165 poems,
that's the thing. Yeah, what do you notice? When I look back, that I kind of there's it's possible to kind of put them together in folders, and this one would be filed in the history poem mm-hmm. folder. Mm-hmm. I have that folder. Mm-hmm. I have the mental stuff folder. I have the love and relationships folder.
Mm-hmm.
I have a politics folder, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
I think Marie noticed that a couple of universe meetings ago, that I'm the only universe member who brings anything political.
Yeah. Agreed, yeah.
Yeah, I had one that they said, like, this is so cultural theorist
kind of thing.
I don't know, it wasn't really political, but it was like that.
You should say that, like, whenever you're being asked, but is there, like, a political motive, or did you mean it like Foucault said? Or yeah, totally, that was exactly what I was going
to. Yeah, that's exactly what I planned. But I remember some of your poetry, like, that they're usually, like, relating to history, and there was one that came off kind of like a criticism, I think.
Yeah. That's more like a mixture of politics and history. Yeah. The politics of history, so to speak.
They come together.
Yeah, so they come together. Yeah. They.
Or the history of politics.
I mean, most history that's been written is the history of politics. So,
true.
I have another one that's basically about growing up and growing older. Growing older in air quotes, like
mm-hmm.
changing, I guess, in your early 20s, mm-hmm. as you do a lot, I suppose.
I think you did say that you were just expressing your own sort of stands for it, kind of, and not, you didn't have in mind to criticize or, be a critique of that historical situation. You just said that you were simply expressing. So I was wondering if you were, like, consciously constructing any ideologies or ideas in your poetry. Do you want to give a message to the world, or is there some kind of an aim like that, or not at all?
I mean, sure, my poetry is influenced by my politics, and it comes through, I think, especially my recent poems that I've now called The Politics of History, which is not my term. This is like a semi-technical term, of course, of history in general. Most of my poems about history, for instance, are about how Austria deals with its own past.
Mm.
Yeah.
Not very well, in general. My most recent ones, one I think was a jab at imperialism, the diary entry one. If you remember that one.
Yes, I think I do.
But it's not like I sit down and like, yeah, now I want to, I have this very stringent ideology in my head, and now I want to put this ideology in a poem and bring it to the universe and bring it to the people. That's not how it works. I suppose it's just, you know, it's what you think about and what bothers you, and then you put that into words.
Again, it's about how you react to it and what you feel about it.
Yeah.
And just simply put it out and express it.
Kind of. Exactly.
Rather than like, I want to educate people on it, or I want them to know that this is bad. Yeah, I get it totally.
Do you share your poems elsewhere or only with us at Universe?
I had a Tumblr for a while, but not really now. The only place I share my poems on is the Universe, yeah. I've been meaning to create a blog for ages now, but I problem is I'm really bad at coming up with names, and now I'm stuck, which is ridiculous. I'm hung up in looking for a name, and I've come up with so many things I want to write about and things that I'd like to put on the blog, but I don't start writing them because I don't have a name yet for the blog, which is like the most ridiculous mental problem or blockade or anything that you can have to creativity. I can't do this now. I don't have a name yet for the place where I'll put it.
That's just so hilarious.
Do you write about people that you know and then try to conceal that and make them
look
different more than they are?
If I'm honest, not many other people appear in my poetry, really. It's incredibly egocentric. It's just this big exercise in self, I don't know, exploration sounds too positive. No, hardly any other. I suppose what appears is the effects of relationships with people stuff like that. But...
And do you think those people would recognize themselves in your poetry?
Oh, sure. I mean, if I told them, they probably would. But, you know, it's always extremely unspecific, I think. Mm-hmm. So it's not like I say, like, you! Then describe the person. But if you describe a feeling that you had, and the feeling was inspired out of a particular relationship that you had with somebody, the feeling might be, you know, they might recognize the feeling, but they, you know, they might recognize what it's about. But no, in general, since hardly any, you know, there's always one pretty much disembodied speaker, I suppose, as far as I know my own stuff, and saying stuff, nobody else really appearing in there. As I said, it's pretty egocentric.
No, I wouldn't call it that way. It's more like abstract, about like your perspective on things rather than...
Yeah, it's very much my perspective, yeah.
I guess, yeah.
That's totally allowed. You can give your perspective. I think sometimes we aren't given enough room to give our own perspective, so it's very nice if we can do that in literature.
Yeah, I think so. It's a way of self-expression as well.
So, now I'm taking back... I'm wrenching my hosting duties away out of your hands, back into my podcasting hands, and asking you to tell me where people can find you on the internet.
It's called Elika Blogspots, COAT or something. You're going to write it down.
Put it in the description below, yeah.
Where I share my poetry and travels. And I also have an Instagram page where I discover and review secret alternative cafes on Instagram. So if you're interested in that, please check that out.
You can find my blog under detintenfish.wordpress.com, and there I publish almost everything that I write, my German things, my English things, poems and prose, and everything in between.
You can find me, since I, please, if you have suggestions for the name of my blog, just
send them in,
contact me, I'll tell you the contact details later, please, just give me ideas, I beg you. So far, you can find me on Twitter at Leo Engelmeyer, which I'll also put in the show notes. This was episode 12 of the Universe podcast. If you enjoyed it and would like to hear more of us, make sure to subscribe to the Universe podcast wherever you're listening to it. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, it would be very nice of you to leave us a review and tell us what you think about the podcast. On the one hand, we'd very much appreciate knowing what you think, and on the other hand, this helps other people find the podcast. And tell all your friends about it. Comments? Questions? You can reach us on Twitter, we're at PodUniverse, on Facebook, or on our email address, podcast@universe.univ.org, where you can send all your suggestions to for the name of Leo's blog. This podcast was edited by Leonhard Engelmeyer. The hosts by Charlotte Zerz and Elivnas Kavaji. The guest on this episode was also Leonhard Engelmeyer. On the editorial board for this episode were both hosts, Charlotte Zerz and Elivnas Kavaji. I hope you visit this planet in the universe again. In the meantime, stay safe in space. Thanks for listening.